215, folks.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for Thursday, June 18th, 2015. This is Michael Norris, and tonight I'm joined by Jay West and Jerry Oates. Bobby Simmons has a church functioning he is attending to this evening, so he won't be with us this evening. So, but I still got great co-hosts either way. So,
June 18th. So 3 more days, and we'll make it to the longest day of the year.
Longest day of the year.
Is that a good day for you working on the beach there, Jerry?
Oh, yeah. The longer in the heat, the better.
That means they're tired and they wear out and you don't have to deal with them, right?
Has it been hot where you guys are? It's been brutal.
Yeah,
here.
It's been like when I got up this morning at 6 o'clock, it was already 95 degrees here.
Yeah, this is as hot as I can remember it in, you know, this early in the year, even though we're coming to the longest day. But, you know, July and August and even into early September are always the very hottest times generally for us here. And we're already seeing it in mid-June. So I'm just real concerned about what's coming up here, folks.
Yep.
Well, they say next
it's 75 degrees
same.
Here now, according to the ballpark. They've been under a rainstorm. Well, all of Atlanta has for the last couple of hours.
Yeah, it's cooled off a little bit. What about next week, Jerry?
It's just going to be the same.
Wow. So have you had any problems with folks having heat issues out there on the beach?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, lucky. And you're taking care of yourself, too, right?
Yes, sir, I am. Believe me.
He's got the world's only air-conditioned golf cart.
But it's better than running on the beach. I can. Yeah, it's been so hot here. We've got a backyard where we keep our dogs in, and we've got three of them, and our lab, who doesn't get along too well with the other two, we keep her in a separate little area. But it's nice, and it's been so hot. We've been having to just, you know, have them outside for a couple of hours and bring them back in and give them a breather. And swap them out and take them back outside. It's just been brutal.
It's tough on animals sometimes.
You're not kidding. And so anyway, they were all glad to see that little bit of rain we had tonight. Hey, have you moved into your new place there, Mike?
No, I'm moving, finishing up tomorrow. That's the reason I was told Jay before we went on. We're going to do about an hour show tonight, Jerry, because I know you've got early morning and I got a busy day tomorrow because I got to finish moving, so I will officially be in tomorrow evening.
Great.
Well, I'm glad for you, Mike.
I was mentioning to you, courtesy of the Wrestling News Observer, where I get all my information, every year the Amsterdam New York Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. I know this isn't your subject, but some of our fans might be interested in it, since, as you said, it's kind of a, we don't know how much we're going to have to talk about here. We may have a lot. But anyway, their 2015 inductees includes a pre-television era. Mike, as the historian, had you ever ran across a wrestler in the 30s and 40s called the Utica, U-T-I-C-A, Panther?
Yeah. What was his name?
Joe was his first name, M-A-L-C-I-E-W-I-C-Z, Malkiewicz.
Joe Malkiewicz, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he was inducted along with the great Gama from pre-TV days. In the non-wrestling category, Jim Crockett Sr., and, you know, they talked a little bit about him and, you know, not just being a wrestling promoter, but promoting all sorts of events, you know, as a lot of promoters did during the 40s and 50s and 60s. In the international inductee, Jumbo Cerruda.
Cerruda.
Yes, Saruta. Thank you, Jerry. From Canada, Whipper Billy Watson. The women's category, it was some name that we never saw much of except in the magazines, was Vivian Vachon. And, you know, a great women's wrestler who, because she wasn't part of Moolah's stable, we never got to see much of her. Others inducted were Pedro Morales, and Mike, I don't know if you've heard anything about him. I know you've got good contacts, but what I was seeing here is that he's in pretty bad shape physically.
Yeah, his health-wise, he's not doing real well. I haven't been able to keep up with him as much in the last couple of years since I've lost contact with Roberto Soto. Soto talked to him, every other month or so. He kept up with him, and of course, Pedro and Manny were closer, Roberto's brother, and they both live in New Jersey, and so he kept up with Pedro through Manny, and Winnie didn't talk to him directly, but I had heard that he was not doing well, and
from what I just read, he's doing really not well, so I was, really concerned that you may have heard something else. Kurt Henning was also inducted, Rick Martel, and the big folks that were inducted that our fans would probably be interested in was the tag team of the year, which was the Freebirds, and Michael Hayes was there to pick up the award. So that's the Amsterdam New York Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame inductees for 2015.
Well, the first person you mentioned, Joe Mousiewicz. I think he, even though he was a very well-known wrestler in the 30s, early 40s, or whatever era he was in, he was best known, I say more recently, but we're talking 50s and 60s, early 60s here. He was the promoter in San Francisco.
Right.
And basically Roy Shire went in and I don't want to say stole the territory from him because he didn't, but he went head-to-head with him and took the territory away. But, he was the Utica Panther.
Yeah, I figured you might know something about him. Had you ever heard of him, Jerry?
No, I had not.
I think that was a great ring name, actually, you think about it, and... he was, as Mike said, he had much success later on as a promoter, which I guess, take somebody like Paul Jones, who was our Paul Jones, not the wrestler that's one of Jerry's favorites from the Mid-Atlantic area, but promoter Paul Jones for so long here, the Atlanta promoter, he was a very successful wrestler before he became a promoter in the business, but if you were to talk to probably the fans that relate to this show, they probably know him almost primarily 100% as promoter Paul Jones rather than as the professional wrestler he was.
Very true. Very true. And speaking of people, go ahead, Jerry.
Speaking of Pedro, I saw a picture of him, a recent picture. I wouldn't have known him.
I think he was in a wheelchair.
He was in a wheelchair, yeah.
I'm pretty
sure. I saw the same picture.
I looked and looked and said, who is this guy? And then I found out who it was, and I don't know what's wrong with him. He doesn't look like he's doing good, whatever.
Do you remember where you saw that picture, Jerry?
I just saw it on Facebook. Somebody had posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, that's sad. Some folks, as the pictures that I've seen of Jerry, they take care of themselves, and as they age, you can tell they're older, but they're, very recognizable. But then some other folks, as they age, and particularly if they've got physical and or mental problems, they become so unrecognizable that if somebody didn't tell you who they were, you wouldn't know.
How old would Pedro be?
I have no idea. I would say in the 1970, which is about the time I started, seeing him coming from the West Coast to New York, he would have been, probably about 27 or 28 at that time, Mike?
Yeah, it's right around late 20s, maybe 30. I'm thinking he's upper 70s.
That's what I'm thinking.
And somebody else who, and I won't go into great detail because I don't know the all the details about it, and there's so much junk on the internet about this and this and this and this about what's going on, but he is in bad health at this point, is Black Jack Mulligan. I've heard 15 different stories out there, and one of the sources out there is Nutty as a pet crocodile, so, you know.
Did you hear the part about he had put up a Facebook or something, a deal where he was trying to collect money for an operation or for something of that nature, and he himself...
Yeah, but the person I was referring to, it was more involved in putting that up than Mulligan actually was. I think he's actually running Mulligan's Facebook page at this point, so, because of some of the stuff that's been put on it in the last day or two.
Somebody had mentioned that to me, that they thought Mulligan was in a wheelchair. But, you know, when we talked to Jerry several months back, you know, and we had talked about headshots and the brutal beatings that some guys took, we never thought about it at the time, but it's time's caught up, and some guys, unfortunately more than others, it's taken a toll on them, and
You think about Dusty. I mean, Dusty's signature match was that bull rope match. And I don't care how talented you are, how careful you are, you can't pull hitting somebody in the head with a cowbell or somebody you in the head with a cowbell.
And that brings me up to the other guy that I wanted to mention. We talked about him briefly a couple of weeks ago, but that was Tommy Rogers. And, I haven't seen anything conclusive on what took his life, but it looks like his last couple of years he had some demons, and it appears that a lot of his problems were related to some of the headshots and the chair shots and everything else that he took in the ring. In seeing some stuff on him, I was surprised not only with Bobby Fulton as a partner, that how they were very successful, but prior to that, he had held some singles titles and U.S. Junior Heavyweight out of Tennessee, and he ended up, last title he held was the IWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship, for whatever that meant, but that was in 2004, so he was still working a little bit. As late as 2004, but from what I've seen, he was really in bad shape, and it didn't take much to set him off there the last few years of his life, and that's very unfortunate for a guy that had a very good ring career.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I think, Jerry, you probably can allow on this more than I can, but it seemed like back in our era, most of the guys... Not that we didn't take shots, you know, but stuff like that. But the wrestling business changed with people like Dynamite Kid and Cactus Jack, especially, where the norm is a chair shot to the head, and that would happen maybe once, twice a year in a territory back in our era. But you know, guys just got so over the top with it, and that that's where all that brain damage and stuff come from.
Well, I saw a match, Mike, like you're talking about. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. You probably saw it. It was Cactus Jack in some match. I don't know who he was in the ring with. He took about, 7, 8, 9, 10 straight headshots. I'm talking about with his head just exposed.
That was a match with The Rock up in New York.
It could have been. I've never seen anything like that in my life. And, you know, what happened, just like Jay was talking about, all these goofy bumps, just like Cactus Jack coming off that cage in New York at that pay-per-view. I mean, there's a payday for that. That's just one of how many.
Absolutely.
I know when you're 27, 26, 28, 29, you actually believe you're invincible. But, you know, it's not the one time, it's the multiple. It's just the accumulation of all this madness. and I know the shape I'm in. I mean, I still take care of myself, but I have aches and pains that I shouldn't have at my age, you know, if I'd have just had a job. But, you know, I chose to do that, and I have to live with it.
Yeah, I think part of it was the fact that, you know, it's like the freight train. As long as you keep moving like that day in, day out, you don't stop to smell the roses, so to speak, and realize what kind of punishment you're taking. You'll take whatever you need to keep going and make the next booking. But then, you know, when things slow down, all of a sudden you realize what's happened to you.
And that's when it really, like you said, once you stop. But if you don't keep working out and keep exercising and keep something going, you know, the old saying, motion is lotion. You got to keep those joints moving. And,
right.
And some guys just, once they come out of that ring, they sit and do nothing but eat or drink or whatever they do, and then it just accumulates faster,
right.
I think.
You know, I certainly can't relate to the ring situation as such, even though that I saw it so much during the 8 years that I worked in the business as a ring announcer, plus the other times that I you know, just watched it as a fan. But from a musician standpoint, I know that, you know, those guys go through a lot of the same stuff. If they're journeyman-type musicians as I was, you know, you work a gig, you load up, you go to it, you stand up with a 20-pound guitar on you for 4 hours, then you get finished, you go home, you unload, and it takes punishment on you. And, you know, you don't have anybody standing there saying, you know, you're not lifting that correctly. You've got a promoter there saying, get this stuff out of here because we got something else going on tomorrow. It's unfortunate, but, you know, it's just part of it you can kind of chalk up as just being part of the business. But on the other hand, you know, if you think about a guy putting your face into the turnbuckle, you knew how to kind of do that, you know, so that it looked a lot more dangerous than it really was. But a shot from a chair to the head, how are you going to make that not look like what it actually is? It's a chair shot to the head, right, Jerry?
That's what it is. And it, you know, it reaches a point where everybody tried to outdo the other one. You know,
exactly.
He's going to look back at this one day and think, my God. And he's old enough now to know. And I can't imagine what shape he's in. I just can't imagine. I the pain he must be in. And you're in pain a lot longer than when you was out there doing it, believe me.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, another thing, too, is go ahead, Jerry. I'm sorry.
No, it's just, you know, every day of your life, you know, and then something else will pop up, you know, like, you know, I have a shoulder that I can't even have fixed without it being replaced, and I'm not going to do that. I've had my knees done, but I live with this every day. But I continue to do what I can do and work out as hard as I can and go to work, and it's just part of what I did, and, I'm paying for it. I'm not the only one, of course, but anybody who's out there any time at all, they get some kind of problem.
And you know, thinking about the knees that you've had replaced, I mean, there's guys in the business that made a lot of money that can't even afford to get that done now, you know?
I know, and I just, there's so many, and like poor Harley. I mean, I think he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I think he is.
Who would ever dream Harley Race would be in a wheelchair? And there's nobody took more bumps than him. I'm not saying off the top of a 20-foot cage, but I mean night in and night out, there's nobody took more bumps than him.
None of that, but working Broadway's all those years he was champion.
I know.
I mean, that just... And I tell you the thing, I know a few weeks ago I was bragging about this new promotion called Lucha Underground, and I'm still a fan of them. I like the Lucha style. Even though it looks choreographed as all get out watching it, but I like some of the innovative, you know, holds and reversals and stuff, the way they work. Well, they went down a peg in my judgment last night. I was watching their most current show, and they've got two guys that are great workers. I mean, they know how to wrestle and all this stuff, but the match that they had, they were working a more or less an Ironman match, or what we used to call an endurance match back in our day, where, you know, you work for a solid hour, and whoever wins the most falls in that hour wins the match.
Right.
So, but what they did right in the middle of the match, and I was pretty into it up until this point, one guy, they were fighting up in a balcony in the building that they run in, and one guy had a guy down on the floor, and he was kind of loopy, so he ran down back down to the ring and drug out three folding chairs and stacked them up three folding chairs high, went back up to the balcony, and the guy reversed it and suplexed him off of it onto those tables in front of about 75 fans. And here the fans are, and you'll have to excuse my language. The fans are chanting, "Holy shit, holy shit, this is awesome." And then, you know, I'm thinking, do these fans even realize what these guys have just done to themselves for their entertainment? I think most of the modern-day fans look at stuff like that like they're looking at a live-action video game.
Well, you can't help but make that comparison. And we could get into other areas that is not part of what this show is, to talk about how people have been affected by video games. And, you know, it kind of sounds like an old man saying, "Oh, back in my day." But seriously, you know, some people that play video games all the time think all they got to do is hit the reset button and they're back in action when they're out there doing some stuff, and it doesn't happen that way, you know?
No, it just...
Well, what kind of two idiots would do something like that?
They do it, like Jay said earlier, they're out there to entertain themselves and up the ante over the next guy, then, you know...
I think
the idea of you know, putting on a match to you know, intrigue the crowd with a storyline or so, those days are, as we all know, are long gone. Now it's who can do the craziest spot, and you know, if I get hurt or if I hurt my opponent, you know, so be it. They'll be talking about this on Facebook tomorrow, and I'll be famous.
They get up from that and do another spot.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can track some of that too. You know, the stuff that became, if you saw the movie, the what was it called, The Wrestler, not the Vern Gagne thing, the thing that
right,
was done.
Right, the one with Mickey Rourke, yeah.
Right, you know, and some of the extreme wrestling things he was doing just to stay in the business, you know.
And you said the right word right there. This all tracks back to Paul Heyman and ECW.
Yeah.
The fans' involvement with the chants and, you know, all that stuff, and allowing all the fans to dictate what goes on and doing stuff just to, you know, get a reaction rather than, you know, have somebody be interested in what you're actually doing in the ring as far as telling a story, you know.
Yeah.
That's
and,
where
know,
all
just,
that came from. And it got so successful as an independent that Vince picked it up, you know, doing it with his stuff, his you know, industry. And then he bought ECW, and, you know, I don't know.
But, you know, you think back to the Sheik and throwing fire and little stuff like that, and the Japanese guy that would throw the powder or the whatever.
Salt, yeah.
You know, it looked good, and it did what it did, but that's a long way from, you know, throwing a guy into a barbed wire fence. Or
light,
you know,
bulbs or weed eaters. And
right, or working on a mat that's covered in light bulbs that's been broken up, you know, it's and you're working in front of, you know, like the old smokers, you're working in front of 40 to 80 fans.
And you get guys that'll do it. That's the scary part. For $20.
Yeah. If they got paid at all.
Exactly.
But anyway,
you hit the bottom of light bulbs.
Sorry, guys, couldn't. Your payoff's gonna be a little short. I had to buy thumbtacks and light bulbs for the main event.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got a new gimmick though. You got that stuff.
But you know, it's like today. You know, these groups go around. You know, I see stuff on a lot of people have deleted me because I write, they must not have a gym in your town. When you see them, you know, if somebody said today, in 6 months, I'll give you 10 grand to get in the ring, you won't have to do much, just tag in and out, and boom, you won't get hurt, you know, somewhere. If I was to do that at my age today, and they give me, and I could, I feel like I could put on my trunks and a pair of boots at my age and would look all right. I wouldn't feel ashamed at my age. But these guys, these are young guys. They've never been in, and when you have to wear a T-shirt in the ring, you shouldn't get in the ring.
Not if you're going to wear it throughout the match. You know, if you've got a logo on it and you're going to take it off before the match, fine. But if you got to wear it to cover up, you know, forget
it. And you know, it just does such an injustice to what we did, you know, to call themselves professional wrestlers. I mean, a professional makes a living doing what he does. That's how I made my living for many years. These guys are, they don't even make enough to pay the gas to and fro.
Yeah,
and obviously,
yeah,
they don't make enough to buy gear from Carl and Hildegard.
You know, we've talked about these guys and, you know, different promotions and who does what. And there's a lot of the little independent promotions around now, and some are better than others. But you'll see a guy occasionally that you'll say, you know, if he'd have been around during that time, he probably could have made it to journeyman level. But for the most part, it's a combination of video games, like you said, and just wanting to impress yourself, because other than that 10 or 12 people in your family that are sitting there, nobody else really cares.
And that's another reason to pay off short, because they got in free.
That is it. And not a clue what they're doing. Not a hint.
Have we mentioned Charlie Smith yet? Okay, we want to get that in before we get out of here.
Speaking of not knowing or having a clue as to what he's doing. But anyway, let's get all this before we go all go to bed mad tonight. So we'll talk about what a subject that I thought would might be a little interesting to talk about, and that's we all came across guys in our days in the business and heard of guys that had you know, unusual or unique hobbies outside of the ring, or had a talent for doing things outside the ring. And the first one that comes to my mind is our co-host here, Jay, Mr. Oates, of course, owned his gym. Did you open the gym while you were still active full-time, didn't you? Didn't you and Ted open it then?
Yes.
And while that's not that an unusual thing, it got to be towards the late 70s, early 80s, a lot of guys had their own gyms and either competed in bodybuilding outside of the wrestling business while they were still full-timers. Billy Graham and Tony Atlas are two that come to mind. Jerry, I know you competed in them after you got out of the business, as did Les Thatcher. But did you ever do anything like that while you were still active?
No. And what I enjoyed doing, I had my gym right at 25 years, and I put on bodybuilding shows for 10 straight years and did well with them. And I was a judge here in Georgia. I'd go up and judge a Mr. Georgia in different contests. I was, I was a certified judge. And from you'd go to other people's shows that put on bodybuilding contests, and I know I'd go to Atlanta, and I'd be there from like 8:30 in the morning till they have a break, and then anyhow you get out of the building at 1 o'clock at night, and I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. A bodybuilding show. When I put on my bodybuilding shows, I ran them the way we ran our business. First of all, I mean, those people work so hard to get on stage. You know, the dieting and the training, and you give them as much time as you can on stage, but I got a sold-out house. I got to entertain these people.
Right.
You know, and I had guys, this is, I guess it's patting myself on the back, but every show I'd have guys from Tennessee, Florida, the Carolinas, Alabama, they would come tell me, said, I've been to many, many shows, but I've never been to a show run like this. I said, well, I appreciate that very much. I said, I worked real hard at it. Yeah, I entertained the people and kept it flowing and always brought Les Thatcher down to do the emceeing. And, you know, I learned from the business and I put it into that, you know, the running of it. No matter what somebody does, if somebody comes to buy a ticket to anything, they want to be entertained.
Right.
Yep.
And they don't want a lot of downtime. They don't want a lot of BS. They want to, you know, you're going to have intermissions and things like that, but they don't want a lot, you know, a lot of time between the folks getting up there and goofiness going on and things like that. They know what they expect to see, and they've paid their ticket, and they ought to see it.
Yeah, they saw it, and I ran it. You know, I gave each one of them, I gave them 1 minute that night on the stage to do their posing routine, and that was it. They said, well, some people give us a minute and a half. I said, I'm giving you a minute. I said, we got 90-something competitors here tonight. You know? Then you just got to run like a business.
Jerry, when did you transition from a full-time wrestler, as that being your paycheck, into going to more where you were making your primary money from owning the gym?
I got off the road full time in the end of 79. But I did a lot of wrestling from 79 up to 2000. I mean, a lot. Like, I would go, I was still going to Japan. I was I would be going back and forth to Louisiana every weekend. Like, I'd leave on a Thursday and come back Monday morning. And then I started doing a lot of wrestling around here. I would go to Ted. Of course, he left the gym and went back on the road full time. And when he went back to Kansas City, I was going back and forth there. I was going to Detroit, different places. I mean, you know, I'd go to down to Dothan once in a while. I mean, I was doing a lot. I was doing a lot.
Well, that was as much as some guys that still call themselves full-time wrestlers,
right,
you know?
Right. And I, you know, had my gym going, and I was blessed to have that, and I did very well with that. But I still wanted to work, you know?
Right. It's hard to give it up.
It was hard to give it up. But it was in my bodybuilding shows. I made good money on those. I mean, I was making money wrestling. I was making money training guys. I had my gym. So it wasn't, I didn't have all my eggs in one basket then, you know?
Right.
Which was good. But, you know, nothing stays the same forever, you know? Like my
sure.
dad always told me, he said, you don't have to change anything, it'll change itself.
But, you know, going from what you were doing on the road and being able to continue to do that part-time, it made it more palatable, I would imagine, than if you'd have just said, okay, I'm hanging up the trunks and I'm going to go do something else.
Right. And it was still connected kind of to what I was doing, you know, working out, training people, you know, how to work out and then training guys to wrestle and, you know, I was busy. I mean, I was busy. I was very busy. But I loved it. I enjoyed what I was doing.
Right.
And I was making money doing it. So, you know, and then a lot of what I learned was from the wrestling business. You know, if you're around, I know when Dickie trained me, you know, he told me one time, he said, you know, you're going to take stuff from me because I trained you. But he said, always watch the guys that you consider to be great workers, not good, but great workers. And he says, you watch them, see how they do things. He said, you go take a little bit from this guy, and you'll take a little bit from that guy and this guy, and it will be you. You won't be Dickie Steinborn, or I won't be Dory Funk Jr., or guys as I was coming up, you know, you'll be yourself, you know.
Right.
And that's what I tried to do, you know. It was a great life, and I wouldn't take anything for it. Would I do it again? More than likely, I'd do it again. I would do it again, and I think most guys would say that. Do it probably different, a little bit different.
Yeah, let me ask you this: if you were a young guy coming along right now, and you had the opportunity to get into the system that would probably lead you to a contract with the WWF, do you think that what they do now would have appealed to you in the same way as what you did at the time you were doing it in the 60s and the 70s and 80s?
No, because, you know, when you're that young, you're gullible. But now, I mean, to make a living at it and to be successful, you only have that one option. You know, in my day, there was territories everywhere. You know, if you didn't like one place, you go somewhere else.
Right.
And since I've been in here in Savannah, I've had three guys at the gym come up to me and said, did you ever train people? I said, yep, sure did. Train some good ones. Would you train me? I said, no. I said, I wouldn't train you. Said, well, I'll pay you. I said, well, I'm thinking to myself, well, if I trained you, I know you'll pay me. But because that ain't no joke, training somebody. But I told him, I said, well, won't you train? I said, first of all, I can train you to wrestle. I said, when I was training guys, I could get them matches. You know, I could get them matches here and there.
Right.
You know, I would run some shows once in a while, new different guys that would use them. I said, I've got nowhere. I can train you, but I can get you no matches. Now,
right.
How will that work out for you? You can tell people you know how to wrestle, but you can't get a match. And so I wouldn't do it. Now, you know, I could have made some good money, but to me, that would be stealing.
Yeah.
Because he could never make a – I don't know where he could make a dime doing it. I'm sure New York, I could send the guy down there. It was probably better. Let's just say he had it, and I could get it out of him, and he was great. They wouldn't book him because they didn't train him.
Right. Not part of their system.
There you go. So I wouldn't do it. I would love to do it, but I wouldn't do it. You know, I've liked money all my life, just like anybody else. But I don't need money like that.
Well, let me ask you this: along the lines of continuing what you did as the owner of a gym, are they still in general successful, or is there just too much of a glut of them today, with a lot of bad ones along with a lot of good ones?
Well, gyms.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I see. There's a gym I work at that I go to here in Savannah, and I gave the guy some suggestions. You know, that old saying, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees because
sure.
You're in the forest.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw some things and I told him, I said, you can do, I'm giving you suggestions. You can do this. I gave him like four or five different things that would help generate people coming in. You know how many of them he's done? None.
Yeah.
And see, I learned the hard way by experience. When I opened my gym, I couldn't find anybody to tell me where to buy, you know, workout clothing, where to get belts, where to get, you know, lifting straps or tank tops or this or that. I learned that all myself the hard way, you know.
Right.
And I see these places, and I try to pass along to them. You've got an influx of people. You might as well have you a little pro shop to sell lifting belts, straps, and workout gloves and this. I said, because they're going to buy it. They might as well buy it from you right here. You got a captive audience.
Yep.
And I shake my head. How they say in business, I don't know. But it's very lucrative if you know how to run one. And I've had people, you know, they knew I had OCM. You know, I've still had some OCM t-shirt. Where was that in Columbus, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you open another gym? Why don't you give me $4 million and I'll open one?
Yeah.
It's very expensive, man. I mean, I got in at the right time, and I was fortunate. I knew how to weld, and I made up tons of my equipment. And I made Rick Farrar some equipment. Y'all remember Rick Farrar?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I made him 13 pieces of equipment in 13 days, and he drove from Alexandria City, Louisiana. He was open gym, and he drove a U-Haul truck, and I made him 13 pieces of equipment. He hauled it back to Louisiana. So, you know, I could weld, I could make equipment if I needed another piece, and when I would go to other places, you know, to wrestle and work out when I was on the road and I'd see a piece of equipment that I didn't have, I'd come back and make it. Upholster it and everything, you know. So, y'all need anything upholstered, I can come by your place.
Well, I tell you what, that's another talent that you know, we didn't know you had.
I love the whale. I love it. I wish I had me a little welding shop now. I just love doing it, making stuff, you know.
My father was a welder, and when he got out of the Army in 45, his uncle got him a job with Armco Steel, and he worked here in Atlanta from 45 until he retired in the early 80s, and you know, that's another job that can have its toll on you as far as if you're not using the right equipment or even just whatever you're welding, that can cause you injury.
You're not kidding. It sure can. I've had some boo boos on it, but I don't know. Like we were supposed to talk about other guys that had other hobbies. My ex brother in law Vicky, he was as good a photographer that I've ever seen.
Right,
he was on my list.
And he,
yep.
The pictures, I would come close to saying there's nobody got any more wrestling pictures than him. They couldn't be. I mean, he's got pictures from when he was a kid with his dad going around, you know. It's just amazing.
Dickie had an eye like he was filming a movie. He wanted this particular shot. He wanted this, you know, this layout and how this and what was interesting about it, you know, this person here and all this stuff. Like the story he told one of the times he was on the show about the, he had a picture from, I guess it was Atlanta or somewhere, that was had this gentleman sitting ringside, and then same guy was there for 20 years, so he wanted to take one, you know, 20 years later of the guy sitting in his same seat, but the guy wouldn't let him because he was with the young lady that wasn't his wife. So that's the way Dick thought about things. You know, he found something interesting in everything. You know, he'd either have the guys pose in a certain way or something, but Dick Steinborn could have easily been a filmmaker.
And then the other thing I learned from the business being around Dickie, when he was in Florida, he used to do the program. It's called Milo's Map. Y'all probably seen a copy of those here and there. Dickie did those. And Dickie took all the pictures in Orlando at the wrestling matches, and then he would put the program together. But Dickie had his own black room, dark room. And I learned to do that. So when I had my gym, I made me a dark room, and I'd take black and white pictures of people in my gym working out, and I'd go out there and develop them and put them up on the wall. They thought they was in Hollywood. You know, pictures of them working out in the gym. I learned to do that, to develop pictures. So,
Lord, you should have been making promo photo pictures for the boys.
We're telling y'all all this tonight. I want a raise for the show. I'm so proud of it.
Well, I tell you what. As soon as they start paying us, I'll let you know and tell them to raise your particular end of it up.
But, you know, that's what this show's about. You know, it's good, bad, and the ugly. And I won't say which one of us is which. But at any rate, with Bobby not here tonight, we'd have to come up with one more. But, you know, it's a lot of times it's very interesting to find out things about people that you only knew one facet of them, and to find out other things that they did and either made it as a sideline or primary profession later on, or or just to do just because they like to do it, you know.
Especially if their hobby was so total opposite against their wrestling personality.
Right.
And the first one that comes to mind to me is Waldo von Erich, who, of course, was a hated German heel all over the country. But outside of the ring, he was an inventor. And
really?
He actually, when he was alive, held several patents on things that he had invented. Two other people that were right along that line were Lars Anderson and Buddy Wolf. They invented some sort of exercise machine called a tummy twister and had it patented and were selling it at one point. I don't know how successful it was, but, you know, they did stuff like that. Either one of you ever heard of the name Hans Hermann?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what he did as a hobby?
I have no idea.
He built cuckoo clocks.
Well, that's a piece of talent there, brother.
You're not kidding. You don't even think about how to do that. That was quite a thing. The guy that I had at the top of my list, and you know, I had not as much contact with the workers out of the ring as you other guys did, but one of the guys that I know about is Jerry Lawler, and the fact that he was a very accomplished artist. And one of the things that he did to help get into the business was to do caricature type drawings of the guys in the business. And I think probably everybody has seen some of the drawings that Jerry Lawler has done of Lance Russell and a lot of guys that worked in the Mid-South area there, that when he was working as a DJ and doing artistic work in order to make himself known to the guys in Memphis there.
He's an unbelievable artist.
Yes.
I give him credit for that. He was an unbelievable artist.
And, you know, he once again, had he not been so interested in getting into the business, I mean, that was his dream, and he used this to kind of help him to meet the workers. But, you know, he could have had a successful career as a caricature artist if he had wanted to do it.
Oh, he could have went to Walt Disney and got a job.
Oh, yeah.
He was unbelievable.
And, there's two others right along that same line that a lot of people find amazing because of his, well, I won't say his ring personality because it's his true personality all the way around, Don Fargo. Don Fargo is a tremendous artist, both as a cartoonist and straight painting, you know.
I've heard that. I heard that he does murals or did murals.
Yeah, he did murals. People would hire him. That's how he made a living for a long time. And there was another guy along that same line that did the caricatures and stuff, and he just passed away recently. Tito was his first name, and I can't remember his last name. It wasn't Tito Romero.
Not Tito Carrion.
Tito Carrion, there you go. He was also a cartoonist.
I did not know that.
Yep, sure did. Sure did. He would, whenever he was in a territory, Fargo did the same thing. He'd do caricatures of the boys in the territory and, you know, give them to them as gifts and stuff like that. Two names. If you had to pick two people in the wrestling business that you guys were ever around or knew of that were gourmet cooks, who would you come up with?
Ooh. You know, that would be hard for me to say. I really didn't socialize with guys much in different territories. I mean, where I used to go, we was on the road all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't, you know, when I was in Oregon, we did a lot of socializing. But I know there were some out there. I couldn't name one, Mike.
I wouldn't either, but I'm sure you could tell us all about them, Mike.
Well, the two that I'm thinking of were Bad Boy Hines and Ox Baker.
I would not.
I don't know if I'd eat anything, either one of those.
You'd have thought maybe Haystacks Calhoun, if you had, not known him personally, just seeing him, you would have thought maybe he was a very good cook. That sort of thing. And with Jerry still on the line, we won't go with the McGuire twins, but
please, thank you, sir.
And, of course, there were several who were well-known singers outside of the wrestling business.
Paul Vachon was...
Paul Vachon, Tiny Frazier, the Plowboy, was one.
He was a great singer.
Paul Vachon was an opera singer.
So was Al Costello of the Kangaroos.
Did not know that.
Yep. Sweet Daddy Sickie was a country and western singer. Gorgeous George Jr., who that's what he did for a living before he became a wrestler. He was a traveling musician.
Journeyman type musician. That's pretty common.
And here's a name I know you're both familiar with. That when I found out about it, what a great singer he was floored me, was Dynamite Dick Dunn.
Did you ever hear him sing?
Nah, I never heard that one either. I never heard him sing,
but many of the guys along the Gulf Coast that I got to know over the years talked about what a great singer he was.
Isn't that something? He could have had a concert and sold both of them out.
He sure could have.
He could have, Mike. You know he could have.
Well, so could Tiny Frazier if he'd have sold pocket watches or Rolexes out of the parking lot.
Oh, God.
Well, Bill Dundee, he was in the circus business. I mean, but he was in the circus business as a performer before he went into professional wrestling, right?
Right, as was a lady wrestler, and unfortunately she's forgotten today because she was killed in the late 50s in a car accident, but Mars Bennett was a well-known wrestler and lady wrestler in the 50s. Was actually a trapeze artist for Ringling Brothers before she became a wrestler.
Really?
Yep. And speaking of lady wrestlers, Gladys Killam Gillam, after her wrestling career, was a lion tamer and an alligator wrestler.
Did she kill him?
Oh, I've got an alligator Monday. Another alligator.
On the beach?
No, it's in somebody's yard. They got a canal right behind their house. I was sitting there. It was about quarter to nine. They said, you need to go to such and such address. So they got an alligator in the yard. I said, oh, thanks for calling.
Did you tell them your name's not Troy and you're not on Swamp People?
They wasn't mad. It was about a four-footer.
I don't care. Didn't he?
Say, if he was dead, you might work a match with him, but... not a lot. Well, you know, Hulk Hogan was a bass player in another one of those type of journeyman-type groups playing in Florida. And we know that, of course, even though he was primarily a manager and not a worker, but Jimmy Hart, you know, was a musician and part of the group, the Gentrys, that... had kind of one-hit wonders. They had a couple other regional hits, but, you know, he took that in his getting together with Jerry Lawler and, made a career out of being a very successful professional wrestling manager.
And he mixed the two professions when Vince went to having entrance music being strictly original stuff because he didn't want to pay the royalties on the stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
He was like the head of that as far as, you know, making the arrangements and getting the musicians and all that stuff.
Right, he was
more
pretty
or less
accomplished.
The music producer for them.
He was a pretty accomplished keyboard player and a pretty good singer, and, you know, he had an ear. And he was, you know, that was just another situation of because he was in, he knew the business, and he was accepted. And then to have that as a secondary profession at that point, it was a good, you know, a good fit for him to be able to do that. Of course, he had to deliver. You know, if he couldn't have delivered, it would have that'd have been the last you'd have heard of it. But, you know, another guy that had probably had as good a capabilities, if he'd been on the outside looking in, probably wouldn't have had that opportunity.
Very true. Well, you know what I just noticed, guys? I don't even think we're on the air anymore. Bobby's had an internet problem here where his internet will quit you have to go reset everything, and I'm not going to fool with that since we're so close to an hour. So I don't know how much of this actually aired tonight or if it may still be recording. So with that in mind, we might as well wrap it up.
I've been doing talking to the two of you regardless.
This
That's
is one of
true.
Our best shows we've done here.
This will come out as a DVD extra as a lost episode.
This better be on the air, Mike, because we'll have to do the show again next week if it's not. I tell you what.
Well, I'll figure that out between now and next week. But anyway.
Okay.
We'll go ahead and wrap it up, and guys, as always, it's been great. Like I said, I don't know if the outro music's going to play, if I can even end the episode, but we'll see.
Well, let's see if you can do that. But Jerry, I want to tell you, it's been very, you know, it's been a very interesting conversation, and it was really good to interact with you and Mike also tonight on this show because I really enjoyed it.
Well, I didn't mean to hog it, but
that's absolutely not a problem at all. So rare we get so much out of you that it's enjoyable.
Yes, sir.
That's the rest of us coast.
That's right.
And we didn't even have to get you mad.
No, that's good. I'm doing well tonight.
I hear you. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you next week.
Okay, see if you can play the outro there, Mike.
All right. No. Internet's not even connected, so it's not doing anything. So. All right. Well.
Good night.
Good night,
everybody.
Bye-bye.